Welcome back to Life on the Loop Golf Podcast, hosted by Marcus Crowe and the ball man, Patrick Faraday. Two guys grinding it out, lugging bags and living the dream. Join us every Wednesday from Tales from the Course, casual conversation and a dose of golf banter. Be sure to subscribe so you never miss an episode and follow us on the socials at Life on the Loop 9.
Subscribe.
Get on the socials, TikTok, Facebook, Life on the Loop 9.
Come on.
Get all your social media content. Get all your needs on the pod.
Talk to us. Bully us. Spam us.
Send us
abuse.
All of it.
Email send us nudes. No. Emails.
And also, if you want to send us stories, either through Instagram or at lifeontheloop@gmail.com as well.
I was told someone sent a story the other day. They actually told me in person. So we'll have to go through that in next week's ep.
Yep. I've also got another story. We've got two stories.
Oh, fantastic.
Two stories for the week prior to this one. But we have a special guest.
Fantastic.
A very special guest here. We have just done a... Well, this is actually the intro. But we're going to be introducing you to the well-renowned English connoisseur of caddy life
that we've referenced many times on this pod, so long-time listeners will know of the guy,
Mr. John Rowell,
absolute geezer,
veteran of the game. Yeah.
Let's just rattle into it. Here's our chat with Johnny Rowell.
Yeah, so whatever you did to unmute it, there should be a video.
Right, start.
Yeah.
How are we doing?
There he is.
Crikey, yeah. Anyway, how are we doing, boys?
Brilliant. Excellent.
All right. Well, we have a very, very special guest, and we are going to introduce him to the world of Life on the Loop Golf Podcast. We've been waiting this for a while.
He's been spoken about multiple times
over
the last year.
He has. He is a fellow looper, of course, but still is in the game. He's come back on his journey back from overseas, back from the UK. Ladies and gentlemen, we have Johnny Rowell. John Rowell.
Welcome. Morning, guys. Morning, everyone. Yeah.
How are we doing?
All good? Yeah, very good. Very good. Yeah, day off today. So, sneaked in a little double on Saturday, which is quite good for me. So, yeah.
Oh, yeah?
Oh. Love that.
Quality.
Yeah, yeah. First one under the belt, yeah.
So you're back in Florida, pretty fresh back in Florida, right?
Back in Florida, not quite sure about the fresh part, but yeah.
The sweaty part. So, John, tell the listeners. So, as I say, we talked about you on the pod a lot. You're a veteran of the game. You've been at all levels. Tell us a little background about yourself and how you got into caddying a little bit like that.
So, as a chubby 11-year-old, in addition to my paper round, I started pulling golf carts for rich Jewish women at Hartsbourne Country Club. And when my dad was in the RAF, so he was stationed at Bushey, Stanmore in London. And there was a golf club called Hartsbourne Country Club a mile down the road.
Was it a Jewish club?
It was a Jewish, predominantly Jewish country club, yeah.
Oh, I didn't know we had them back on.
Oh, mate, Rolls Royces and the Jensen Interceptors at the time.
Huh.
And I had a regular woman, Mrs. Griver. I remember her name to this day, Mrs. Griver.
Huh.
Who would smoke consulate menthol cigarettes while chewing Juicy Fruit chewing gum. Which was a lovely combo. Goodness. So, caddy, look at my little caddy.
Jeez, that's quality. Was she any good?
No.
Oh, that's funny.
And Bernard Hunt, you guys are 50 years younger than me, but I mean, Bernard Hunt was the sort of the tour pro attached there. So we had people like Malcolm Gregson and Pip Elson coming down, and that's he'd caddy for these guys, which was, it was a little 12-year-old getting the game. It was.
Huh. Yeah. I never even heard of the course. What was it again?
Hartsbourne. H-A-R-T-S. Hartsbourne Country Club. Still there. Still very much there. Ooster House. Shot 61. Oh, I saw the last 9 holes. He was just draining everything.
Huh.
with a ping answer putter that actually pinged. It was like, wow.
Damn.
What year was that?
Dude, I ain't telling you. Everything was black and white. Let's say 70s.
Brilliant.
And if we didn't, we used to, it was a quid. I think it was a quid around, which was brilliant.
Nah,
that's crazy.
Oh, yeah. So they just throw you a £1 coin?
Yeah, and of course you try and get the two bob, the 10p tip. And if you didn't get the tip, you would snaffle a Dunlop 65, which were in paper wrappers at the time. Take it to the pro shop.
Wait, golf balls were in paper wrappers?
Dude, you didn't know that?
No, I didn't know that.
You unpeel the Dunlop 65.
Oh my god, it's like a Terry's chocolate orange.
You've got to Google it.
Yeah, that's kind of cool.
And how much was that worth?
It was a bottle of Coke and a Mars bar.
Oh, Mars bar, I do miss those.
That's funny.
That's absolutely hilarious.
Jesus Christ, golf.
But that was the same era that your dinner money was 10p. And that would either get you 10 number six or a big bag of chips.
Huh.
Unbelievable. Yeah. How times have changed.
Crikey.
Yeah, there we are.
So tell us a bit about your journey, John. So obviously you were doing that at Hartsbourne, but when was it when you thought, okay, I'm going to get into the caddying world, or, you know, did you get into the finance world? Tell us a bit about that.
I mean, I've caddied on and off pretty much all my life in the summer holidays and stuff. But for my sins, I actually went to St. Paul's Teacher Training College and became a bloody English teacher, which, I played for Wiltshire as a golfer, played for Wiltshire for 7 years, just eat, slept and drank golf nonstop, and should have turned pro, and would have turned pro if things weren't so, you know, different in those days. I mean, and my uncle had been a pro, so my mum and dad were like, oh, you know, because he was a pro at All Woodley, which is a brilliant course in Leeds. But back in the day, he was a club servant, and you had to go in the back entrance, and, you know, it wasn't as glam as it is these days, you know. So there was a lot of parental pressure to go and get a qualification. So ended up doing English at PE, and then fell into going out to the Middle East to teach English, because at the time it was like a grand a month or something, tax-free, which was bloody brilliant then. And so free accommodation, massive holidays, good money, and just sort of
went there to teach English. Did you have to learn their language to teach them?
No, you teach by the direct method, so it's just bringing it all back to basics, you know. So sort of, hello, how are you, my name is they prefer that. I mean, I do speak a bit of Arabic, do speak quite a bit, but they wanted the direct method. So anyway, that all led to, I ended up teaching at the military. I taught for HSBC. I became their English language, their regional head for the whole Middle East, which basically involved developing a test to find out where everyone was at, and then sort of outsourcing. And then I got taken on by Abu Dhabi National Oil Company to nurture their leaders of tomorrow, their junior managers, which was a brilliant month-on, month-off job. So I'd come back to North Berwick, where the family home was at the time, and caddy at Muirfield and North Berwick and Archerfield and Renaissance. And then when that job finished in 2016, that's when I became full-time.
Hmm.
Love that.
Like full-time over there?
Yeah, so Old Collier, where I am now in Florida, which is this brilliant little course in Naples, where they give us this H-2B visa. So it's 6 months here, 6 months back in the UK. So that's where I've been since 2016.
Yeah.
I've dabbled in your area, John. I went to school at Loretto in Musselboro.
Yeah.
So I know those courses as well. And I do admit, like, the summers in Renaissance and Muirfield are just perfect. So is it always something that you've wanted to do? Or, as I say, it was circumstantial when you wanted to split your time up from kind of Scotland in the summers and then come over here in the winter and get away from the cold?
Yeah, I mean, golf has always been the passion. You know, I mean, I should have just turned pro. I had lots of offers to turn pro when I was, you know, 18 to 21. I should have just done that, you know, Northfield, Swindon, Chippenham. But I didn't. So, you know, the golf's always been there. And then when I found out that you could go on stage for 6 months and make money, and just live being a caddy. I thought, bloody hell, where do I sign up?
Yeah. So you were how old when you thought about that? You said like 18, 19, 20?
Yeah. I mean, thinking about it, why didn't I just become a caddy then? I should have just said, bollocks for further education and just gone on to it. Yeah. And like guys that I know now quite well, like Aubrey's caddy, Richard Hallam, he's my sort of age and he's done that all his life and done really rather well. And will probably continue. Yeah.
How's the body feeling though after, good?
Solid? Yeah, I mean, I'm always carrying a few extra pounds, but I'm quite strong, thankfully. You know, the knees are. I was never like a mad soccer player, so the knees aren't dodgy. But yeah, I'll go on. We've got caddies at North Berwick who are 80, 81. You know, Alec Henderson's 81 at North Berwick. And,
Jesus, nuts.
He'll do 7 a week.
Wow.
Quality.
See, that's a blessed body. I just can't do that. My back is so bad. It's so bad.
Well, actually, I digress slightly, but I did St Andrews this season because I couldn't get the place I rent in North Berwick, which I normally get. So I did St Andrews for 4 months. So you've got Seve's caddy Ian Wright from when he won the Open in 1988. Wright's 73. He'll go once or twice a day.
That's sick. Yeah. He's got some stories as well.
Oh, Christ, has he ever? Has he ever?
How long was he on Seve's bag for?
Not that long.
Not that long. Because it was Forster, wasn't it?
Yeah, quite a few.
Billy Forster, for a while.
Yeah, Billy never won a major with him.
Billy's no, he didn't, major. No. His Fitzpatrick was his first major, right?
Yeah.
Wow. Wow. It must be, so those guys, right, you're rubbing shoulders with them over there. Like, do they ever say, like, how it's so different when, we had David Geese on last week and he's, with a rookie on tour right now, and what's the difference do they say between obviously the tour pro and the general caddy life? Obviously the playing wise, but obviously they come back into the general caddy life of things. Do you not think they would stay in the game? Obviously at that age at 70 something, you're not going to have a bag, but is it something you ever thought about trying to go kind of on the pro circuit, European tour?
I thought about it, and again, some of our lads. I mean, Stevie Nielsen's on Ewan Ferguson's bag. I forget the chap from Gullen who's on Maronk's bag, Stevie's won twice with Ferguson, so he's doing all right. I've thought about it a lot. But at my age now, I'm not going to, if I was 20 years younger, I might go for it. But then, how many pizzas and McDonald's can you eat? How many Ubers are you going to take? How many Holiday Inn Expresses are you going to share a room with? How many, months are you going to tolerate missing four cups in a row? It's not that glamorous, really.
Not glamorous at all.
Yeah. See,
we lived in Dubai as a family, had a lovely house for a while, and Chris Lilly, who was caddying for Raphael Jacquelin, and Richard, who was with Coulthard at the time, and two sort of decent pros, they would stay with us every Dubai Desert Classic, and just for them to have a laundry, a computer, like to be able to chill in a nice environment was massive for them, they've gone sort of, Qatar, Abu Dhabi, Dubai, haven't bloody done their laundry, missed a couple of cuts. It was like, oh.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty grim.
I know. I feel like it's different now. I feel like, there's a lot more friends and family on the bags now, and a lot younger caddies who have either played on tour or mini tours before. Back then I think we just had a cool experience with Wyndham Clark, and he was saying a lot to do with like how they want someone of similar age just so they can relate a little bit more, and because of the technology, over the years, John, have you seen a huge difference in the caddying style of the game, or is it similar?
I think with the lasers, it's a lot easier and quicker to become a caddy these days. I mean, back in the day, you had to know the edge of every bunker to the front, the sprinkler heads. Like Muirfield didn't have any numbers or markings on sprinkler heads up until 2013. So I started caddying there in 2006. You had nothing, no books, no nothing. Just you had to know what it was from that bunker to the front, from that sprinkler head that didn't have a number.
That's sick. That makes it more of an arc,
Yeah. Well, Hogan. Hogan never used a yardage, apparently.
Oh, wow.
they played these courses year in, year out. He knew from bunker on 15 to the, you know, to 7-iron.
That's sick.
Well, we remember, you know, we're not that young, but you know, back before lasers hit for us, probably me and you, probably back in like 2012, 13, 14. Like that was the same thing. It was feel. As a junior, you would just be like, okay, I hit my 7-iron, you know, 140 or whatever, and you kind of judge it from there, from the stakes on the middle, you know.
Stakes with a classic.
Yeah.
Pace off the stake.
I feel like you were so much better. Now it's like you get kids doing the Boschnals from like 30 yards out. It's like, you got to have more feel, you know. That's so, yeah.
Well, don't you guys at Old Collier walk things off, or you're meant to
walk
things off?
We do. Yeah. If the player specifically says, I have a laser, feel free to use it, then you can. That's probably 15% of the membership.
Interesting.
10 to 15%. They quite like us walking off, you know. And yeah, when we double check with the Bushnell, it's still bloody good. You know, front, middle, back sprinkler and an accurate pin sheet. Yeah, pretty spot on.
Interesting. So you have the
Ian Wright. Let's go back to Semi's caddy, Ian Wright. You may have seen some of the yardage books from back in the day. Yardages by Ian Wright. He had one of those devices, the wheel, the wooden circular wheel that clicked every yard.
Ah.
Click, click, click. That's how he did the yardage books.
Shit.
Give us a little more of a detail, John, for the listeners. Right. So it's a wooden wheel.
It's a wooden wheel, a wooden disc, a wooden circle with a handle that had a little thing on that would click every yard. So
whilst you're walking, I'm guessing,
just
right?
Just a wheel, just a ticker. So every time gets to the top, it'll tick, and every tick is a yard.
Wow!
So you got to count the ticks for the yard.
Yeah. Wow.
I mean, I suppose once he's done Troon's and Andrews Muirfield once, not much will have changed when he did it the next year. But you know, he did, and then.
Hell.
And you've seen tour caddy books with the circles, the hexagons, the pentagons, you know.
Yeah.
You know, we've all caddied a few tour events. I've done some Desert Classics. I've done Gary Player in the Senior Open at Troon. You know, but for Christ's sake, don't mess up a pentagon with a bloody hexagon. It's just, you know, under pressure, it's like, hang on a minute. What's front? Pentagon or hexagon? 1, 4, 5.
You're getting the glasses out, making sure 100%.
Yeah.
That's quality.
I also do some stuff for European Tour Productions, you know, the microphone holding when you're right in the thick of the action then with, you know, one of the top three groups. That's brilliant fun. So you see these caddies under pressure because you're watching them, you know, you're watching the leading groups at the last stage of the tournament. You're hearing every single word they say and seeing some of the cock-ups sometimes, you know.
Have you seen them do any big cock-ups or anything?
Not big cock-ups, but, you know, without naming names, some of the top 10 in the world will say that they can. I mean, not that many of them read greens, to be fair. It's probably only about 20% of them that read greens. But, you know, did I say Ricky Fowler? Would say, so at the very end, it's going left, right. It's going left, right, yeah. Absolutely, boss. And if I can does the opposite, you know, I mean, once or twice, I mean.
Huh.
I remember Gary Stahl. I remember this because it was in Abu Dhabi when Keimer, who always used to win the HSBC, he just turned up and win it, you know, back in the 2012 to 16 era.
Yeah.
He was 9 clear on the last day. I'm working with a TV guy, John. I forget his second name. He's like the most legendary sports, you know, golf cameraman ever. He's like, why did I wake up today? What am I doing? Because we're out with Gary Stahl, we're out with Keimer, who's 9 shots clear. After 12 holes, Stahl somehow got 4 birdies and Keimer's gone like bogey, double, and the gap sort of got increasingly closer. And then, you know, after like the 3 holes left, old Stahl was sort of, you know, neck and neck. And he had this caddy, this Maori caddy, I forget his name. He was like swaying bloody buckets, you know, because he'd been on tour for 35, 40 years and never won a bloody thing, you know. And he's on, I forget which hole it was, 15. And he's looking at this yellow disc. And he's like, what's front? And he goes, 1, 4, 5. And Stahl goes, do you mean 1, 6, 8? And he went, yes, boss. He got the wrong one, you know.
That sort of thing,
yeah.
It's a lot more automatic now because obviously the relationships as well, you know, with caddies are, you know, as I say, it's that friends and family, right? So it's more now of like, trusting someone 100%, and guys don't even look at yardage books. Some guys don't, I'm told, don't even look at yardage books. They just take their word from their caddy. So I feel like that's even more pressure.
Yeah. What about Tyrrell's, I can forget his name, I can see him. I was chatting to him at Renaissance recently. Tyrrell Hatton's caddy, he's an old fart like me. Struggles to walk.
I've got his face in my mind. I've forgotten his name.
Yeah, and that's just someone that Tyrrell feels extremely comfortable with, you know. And Tyrrell obviously knows a bunch of, you know, 32-year-old, 34-year-old guys that have been his contemporaries, but he wants, what's his name? Quickie.
Google it now.
Can't remember. In fact, so I go to Renaissance to watch the last day of the Scottish Open, that Rory Bob McIntyre drama, and we're on 18T. I'm behind 18T just watching, and he comes up and he looks at me and he goes, "Is this, do you want a Rolex?" And he pulls into the caddy thing and pulls out a silver Rolex marker. Yeah, cheers, dude. Marker.
That's still kind of cool, though.
Come on, Marcus, get his name.
Mick Donaghy, he is an old boy. He's
been on tour forever, hasn't he? So Tyrrell, you know, telling Tyrrell to sort of fly a 5-iron down there and land it down.
No.
Come on, he's...
He probably can't hit a ball himself.
Well, Edinburgh Jimmy, who's sadly passed away 2 years ago, one of the most loved and adored caddies ever, caddied for McGinley. Well, he's caddied for everyone, but he caddied for McGinley latterly. And he didn't do a yardage in his life. McGinley liked him, you know.
That's right. He was just carrying a bag, just chatting.
Yeah.
That's cool. Yeah. What a gig.
Oh, yeah.
Fluff came to our place. We have this charity event at the beginning of the season that'll be coming up soon. And Fluff Cowan came up and played in it. You know, Tiger's original caddy.
Yeah,
he's caddy for everyone, obviously.
He still plays.
Decent swing, yeah, sort of 8 handicap, but pretty solid, yeah.
He's an old boy now, isn't he?
He is
an old boy.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you have a few mutual friends back in Scotland, John, the Saltmans brothers.
Lloyd and one of the best talents ever in the game.
Unbelievable. I mean,
he's a flusher. They all flush it. They all bomb it. I mean, ranked higher than McIlroy in the Walker Cup, won the Liv and won the Brabazon, 15th in the Open in 05. And here's a story for you. So I used to caddy for both of them quite a bit at Archerfield and Gary Player. Both of them play having a knock, and there's this kid behind. And he keeps bombing these 320-yard drives. And, you know, after about 11 holes, player says, who's that lady? Who's that kiddie? What's going on behind? He's called Lloyd Saltman. Lady, come up here. So we play the last 6 holes together. Lloyd and player, and he's like giving him tips and that, and fucking, you know, one thing or another. Lloyd's playing pretty damn good. And we get to 18. Chubby Chandler is there. He's come up specifically to sign Lloyd.
Yeah.
He didn't get him.
Really?
This is pretty controversial. Mum and Dad Saltman thought they could do it without an agent. You know, Mum was going to be the travel agent and Dad with him. Never signed up with him.
Damn,
no way.
Had he done so, Chubby would have got him into the South African events, you know, in the November, December. He'd have got him into Qatar and Abu Dhabi. I mean, Lloyd shot 62 at Renaissance in a Tartan Tour event a year ago, and he's like, nah, ain't good enough.
That's nuts. Chubby was the big dog back in the day. They like
Rory
Schwartzel Clark.
Schwartzel Clark. Yeah.
Jeez, how'd you turn that down?
When would that have been? 2006 or 7?
Yeah,
2007, I'm going to say 07, yeah.
Yeah, he was an unbelievable player. As I say, I spent some time in Scotland, and I knew obviously about him and his brothers because, you know, Elliot and Zach were, I think, kind of lingering on the Euro Pro and the European Tour. And
Elliot played 3 Opens.
Unbelievable. As a family, Lloyd was ridiculously good.
Mike Weir and Zach Johnson have won multiple majors. Lloyd would annihilate them as a ball striker. It would be embarrassing to put them side by side. I mean, Lloyd caddied. He caddied for a few seasons, and now he's got something going on at Fenton Barnes, a sort of elite player, you know, fine tuning. Flusher.
It's just funny. So what do you think? You know, you've been around the game a while. Like, what was the difference then between, as you just said, Mike Weir and those guys? Like, he would kill them ball striking wise. But what do you mean by, you know, they would crush them? Yes, they would crush them maybe in ball striking, but where's the difference between those guys then, if that makes sense? Like, where's the difference between Lloyd kicking off?
Yeah, I'm not a stats guy. I mean, Pat probably knows more than me about dispersion and pads, but obviously you've got to assume, you know, 120 and in, they're absolutely razor sharp, you know.
Because he's at the top of his game.
Yeah, another example. You might know this guy, Ross Bain. Scottish lad, lived out in Dubai. So when I was out in Dubai, playing quite a lot at Emirates Golf Club, Bjorn Stenson were out there then. They lived out there then. Mm. And Ross Bain is a scratch golfer, plus one, whatever, turned pro. He bombed it. You know, he, again, another flusher. He played with Thomas quite a lot. And I remember one day he says, Thomas, you know, what have we got to do to make it? He says, it's a ball striker, Ross. He goes, yeah, you're top 50. As good as the top 50 on your European tour. He says, I can't even give you a number for how bad you are from 100 yards in. He wasn't bad. He wasn't bad. But
the level you've got to be at.
Yeah.
He's on a whole different level. I remember Lloyd was, he was first off in Muirfield back in like 2013, 2014 when Phil won. And he took, I think he took like a 9 because it was OB left, OB right where the tents were. And I was like, it's just not what you want for a 6:30 AM tee time, that to be your first score, you know?
Should we revisit Tiger's opening tee shot on day one?
Oh, was that controversial drop as well when he spanned the ball?
How about 3-wood? There's a wall. I've carried there since 2006. I've never seen anyone go over that wall.
The left side one, right?
So there's a tree that some people get there. Tiger was left of the tree, between the tree and the wall. He was 3 feet from going over that wall with a 3-wood in 2013.
Because it was playing dry.
Yeah.
That was probably that's probably the driest I've ever seen it. Obviously,
We've never seen it before since.
No. That was nuts.
Lefty, this is on YouTube. Lefty on 15 on the last day. It's a 5-iron to keep short of the bunkers. Our 5-iron goes 3-3-3. YouTube it.
That's incredible. I mean, he hit Phil hit 3-wood 3-wood into 17.
He did.
Like unheard of.
Rocket bounce just flew the cross bunkers. So Stevie Nielsen was caddying for, oh Christ almighty, what's his name? Journeyman Scott, who somehow got to the last day of the HSBC 2014. It's driving me mental. Anyway, so Stevie is in the last group in Abu Dhabi with Lefty, who was the leader, and he saw his 3-wood. It was 9 degrees and 46 inch shaft.
Bloody hell.
Jeez. That's a driver, isn't it? Yeah.
Crikey.
Yeah, it was 2 3-woods, but one wasn't a 3-wood.
Yeah. 3-wood.
He won the Masters years earlier with 2 drivers, one with a 47 inch shaft.
I remember that. They said he wanted one that he could draw it with, one he could fade it with.
There you go.
Genius. That's the level. That's the level you got to be at, you know.
Yeah. Reminds me, like, even Wyndham Clark the other day, the thing that I was most struck with was just his, like, wedge play and stuff. 100 yards in, everything was pin high. He was, like, asking the slopes, trying to find exact landing points. It was just so precise. It was nuts.
Brian Harman wins the Open. Who? What were those putting stats on the weekend?
That was ridiculous. And he didn't hit. He hit 2 bunkers all 4 days, and the 2 bunkers were on the last 4 holes. And he got up.
Was it not 48 putts out of 49 from 10 feet and in? From 10 feet and in, he drained. Yeah.
Crazy.
It's unbelievable. So you're back in Florida now, John. What's the plan for the season? looping for a couple months.
Well, what's kind of annoying, we've got this new owner of the club who's brilliant, and we're grateful to be here, but we used to come out 1st of November till the end of April. Now we're doing 1st of October to end of March, which we want to be here in April because there's loads of work. And the Americans are overrun when we all leave. But apparently his lawyer says that it makes it easier for them to get the H-2B visa if they bring us out this month earlier. So it's quiet now and we miss a good month. But it's still good.
So, John, dive into a little bit of that, because that's not many clubs do that.
It's the only club in the States.
Yeah, I was going to say, literally one or maybe two that I know of, maybe if not the only one. That's huge, right? An awesome kind of part of the club that a lot of guys, I'm sure, would love to join back from the UK. Is it majority older guys?
No,
are at OC, or is it no? Make better mix.
There's a younger element coming in now. Bit of a renaissance mafia as well. There's a few of them are coming because the four caddying gig there is the same as it is here. The same signals, the same four caddy thing. You know, it's an easy fit for them. In fact, there are only four English guys. The rest are all Scottish and Irish.
Huh. Wow.
And there's 30 of them. There used to be 42 of us on the HGB visa. Now there's only 30. So okay. 26 are Irish or Scottish.
It must be. It's a nice little touch for the club to also bring in caddies from the UK. I always feel like, you know, when you were at OM and we're there, I feel like you're already one step ahead, because it kind of gives that authenticity of oh, these boys must know how to play golf, or you know.
Well, all the members have either just played the old course in Muirfield or are about to go and play it. You know, so when they come over in the summer, they want an old Collier caddy sort of thing. So it's really quite a good little network and family kind of thing, you know. Because
that club's always been notorious for having like Scottish and English people. I've always heard about it.
Yeah.
Is the caddy master or something? Is he Scottish?
He's from near St Andrews, yeah. Yeah. Big Darren.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So what was I going to say? We've got some good pros there now. We've got Curtis Strange, we've got Chip Beck, we've got Brad Faxon's just joined, Peter Jacobson, Bobby Clampett. It's pretty decent.
They play a lot, or they just practice?
Chip Beck's up there a lot. Chip Beck's there a lot. And Bobby Clampett's got an academy. He's a swing guru / geek. I mean, he's so into the technicalities of it all, you know.
Do you have to take caddies down there, or is it optional?
99%. I mean, if you turn up at 3 in the afternoon with your wife, you can jump on a cart and not have one. But generally...
Boiler suits?
At the moment, it's bibs, khaki shorts, and white shirts, but that's changing soon. Yeah. A dreaded boiler suit.
Brilliant. I need to get a picture of you in a boiler suit.
Yeah. Extra hot day. All you've got on is some kegs and a boiler suit.
Have you got your name on the back as well?
If you want, I can show you a boiler suit. Just hang it up. Let's go see it.
Let's have a look.
Oh, yes.
The new lightweight material for the season.
Oh, come on.
Apparently, allegedly, yeah.
That's awesome.
What a short sleeve as well. I love that.
Is anything on the back?
Nothing on the back, just one of these little weird little things.
Yeah. So, I would say J. Rowell. I want to go. I would love equality. Love that.
There we are. Well. So we'll caddy here until the end of March, and then a couple of weeks in Lanzarote to chill out, because nothing much is going on early April back home. So a couple of weeks in the Canaries, and then Rock up at East Lothian again, mid to late April.
Yeah. So we met you at our club. You were looping there. What was the series of events that brought you up?
Yeah. In COVID, the club couldn't get the visa. So I didn't want to stay in the UK with all the strict restrictions. So, and we couldn't even fly from Europe into the States at the time. So work smarter, not harder. Go to Turkey, which isn't Europe, and then do Turkey, Miami. I've got my girlfriend here in Naples, so stayed there for a few weeks, and then new people at OM knew of Mahaf, put in a phone call, and yeah, it's a brilliant club. You guys are privileged. I mean, the vibe up there is second to none.
I love it. How long were you there? Just the one season?
A year and a bit.
Yeah. I felt like you were there forever. Maybe because I felt like I was there forever. I always remember we didn't really get on the many loops, but it's always nice when you get an English guy on.
I mean, there's not one caddy there that you didn't want to go out with, pretty much. Maybe one or two, but yeah. Generally, well, you know, so you mentioned the Duke the other day, you know, and the Duke.
He is what a character. Oh my
Johnny Singh's left.
Yeah, he's supposed to have a gig in Portugal that fell through.
It was a good club.
I think you know what we enjoy most is that everyone there is 98% of the guys there are good at what they do. So it's not like you're having to, you know, train a rookie or you know everyone knows the deal, right? Yeah. Everyone knows the club that it represents. So it kind of all you know moves like clockwork, which is nice.
Mm. The whole setup is brilliant, you know. From the leadership, you know, Chris is whatever he does or doesn't do works, you know. And the spectrum of people you've got there, you know, from the chairman of Augusta right down to some of the lads coming in just to have a good time. I mean, but each and every one of them finds what they're looking for there.
Yeah, it's just fun. Like,
great golf course.
The other places we've been, it's all just a bit boring. Like the guys are just boring. Here's just fun. Like they want to come have a good time, have a cocktail.
Yeah. How golf should be played?
You walk in that caddy shed at your place, and it's like Matt Haffey will give you, it'll abuse you. You know, there'll be a donut and a coffee on the go, and then
So comparing caddying, this is a great question. I feel like I really would like to know this. So comparing caddying back in Scotland to America, what's the biggest differences, would you say?
They want history and info of the area in Scotland. You know, so you're standing there in North Barrett looking across the water. That's Ely, that's Crail, that's the new course Dunbarney, that's Edinburgh there. See that? That's Arthur's Seat in the middle of Edinburgh. You know, whoa, you know, do you want to know a good pub to go to? Your wife's going shop. You know, tons of info on the area. The history of Muirfield, you know, who won here in 66? Where did Trevino chip in to ruin Jacklin's career on 17 in 1972? Where was Lefty's three with, you know, all that sort of stuff. A whole load of extra info. It's all pretty.
Kind of makes the experience obviously 10 times better, especially because there's so much history, which I guess Americans don't really have. You know, the oldest course here is like 1860 something, 1870 something, but realistically it's like in the early 1900s. Whereas, I mean, golf dates back to, I mean, the Musselburgh, the first ever golf course in like 17th century. You know,
how about the original 13 holes rules of golf on display in Muirfield Clubhouse? The, you know, handwritten, the first 13 rules of golf. Yeah.
So for the listeners, John, tell us a little bit about Muirfield. Obviously, I'm knowledgeable about some things, but for you as a caddy, but also someone who's lived there, tell us about Muirfield.
18 phenomenal golf holes, no burns, no bridges, no you know outstanding views or anything. Just 18 rock solid golf holes. You know, how can it be that no one's shot better than 65 in the last 30 years? How can that be, you know, with the way they destroy courses these days?
Yeah. So tell us a little bit about kind of like the aura of the club, because it's not your ordinary kind of style of golf club. You don't go in with, you know, tell us a little bit about how a day in the life of a Muirfield caddy / guest or member would be.
It's a good question, and it's a little bit different if you'd asked me a year ago, because we have a new caddy mistress now called Claire Newlands, and she has flipped the place and turned it over and made it super professional, super swift, and just way more transparent and good in a lot of ways. When I first went there in 2006, you'd go in the caddy shed, and the caddy master was a guy called Walter, and you'd all sit. There'd be 50 of you sitting in the bloody caddy shed like that. and the phone would ring.
Oh.
And four names would get read out. And you walked out. And you hadn't got a bloody clue if you were getting out that day, what time you get. That's how it was in 2006.
Yeah.
Then George came in and it was all a bit, you know, a bit better and that. And then you kind of get a time and you weren't sure if you were in 18 or 36. And, you know, but now it's... So, yeah, so you're not allowed to play... no more than a two ball can go off in the afternoon. So it's either two singles or alternate. And the DNA of Muirfield is to play alternate or foursomes. So, you know, your American group comes up, they play their own ball in the morning and then alternate in the afternoon. And there's a myriad of paths cut through the golf course to make, you know, if your guy's not teeing off, he's standing with you 200 yards down the fairway, the ball lands, you hit it, you're round in 2.5 hours in the afternoon. The members are addicted to foursomes. That's all they play. So they'll play against Rolls at George's, play against the Royal Ancient, play their club matches in foursomes, and they're trying to win 6 and 5 or lose 6 and 5 so they can get on with the serious business of eating and drinking.
Eating and drinking. Because that's also something else that isn't your ordinary, you know, going after the clubhouse, right? There's certain attire to be worn.
Coat and tie, jacket and tie. Must be worn, yeah. The food is absolutely fantastic. It's a buffet, but it's a luxurious, sumptuous buffet with the finest, you know, Scottish produce. It retains that level of what some would call stuffiness, but people sort of know that before they come. They're very respectful. You remember the Payne Stewart story?
No.
Oh, crikey. I mean, I can't remember which year, but it was when he was reigning US Open champion. Turned up to play, but there was no booking for him. A girl had phoned up a week before and spoken to someone and apparently made the booking, but it wasn't logged in the system. And half an hour later, the police sergeant, the duty police sergeant from Gullin had come up. There was quite an entourage. There were 30 or 40 people there, a bit of a kerfuffle, and... Mr. Stewart did not play Muirfield that day. He played Gullin and looked down from the seventh tee on Gullin number one, and there were about 16 people playing Muirfield that day.
Yeah. There's certain rules in golf.
That's quality. I love that.
JT, Timberlake comes with his mum and his PA. Secretary kind of running out. Players may not be accompanied. 20 minutes later, mum was allowed to accompany him, but the PA was sent off to the Ducks Inn, have a lady to have a brunch or something.
That's funny. What do you think, John? You know, caddying world-renowned golf courses, you know, are caddies tread a lot better now?
Crikey, yeah.
Yeah. Why is that, do you think? Just how the social life's going, or is it within the people around the club have thought caddies are actually worth more than what they have been, or?
Yeah, I mean, you've got probably 15 or 20 rock star caddies in the States, haven't you? You've got Bones and Geller and all these guys that are flying net jets, and you know, they're a different, obviously a different breed. But maybe in the past, I mean, at Muirfield, the sort of hardcore caddies came from Preston Pans and Wallyford, and these guys left school at 15, they weren't educated, and, you know, they were pretty rough and ready. But now you've got, you know, a lot of retired police inspectors, firemen, lawyers. There's a couple of lawyers. There's, you know, a better class of caddy, perhaps, you know. But they are given respect.
Love it.
Yeah.
How long do you think you're going to stay in the game for?
Well, I look at the blokes who are in their late 70s and 80s. If they were to stop caddying, I think that would be very detrimental to their health and lifestyle and general well-being. So I reckon, if I mean, if it's in Andrews in the afternoon, you can pull a trolley.
Oh hell yeah!
I still see myself doing 5 loops when I'm 80.
Yeah,
I reckon.
You love it. I love that.
Yeah.
So yeah.
They've got a golf course. Is that a golf course? It's a bloody good place to be, isn't it?
Fresh air.
Decent banter. How many complete plonkers do you get in a year who are in a really bad mood? You know, it's a miserable experience.
Not many.
Well, that's the thing as well. You're there to play golf. We're at clubs where, you know, there's a lot of guest play. Obviously, more so when you're at St. Andrews and Muirfield, just because, you know, guys want to go out there and, you know, get the history of the course. How, you know, you're in guys' trips and stuff like that. So, yeah, I think we're in a lot better position to necessarily what I think what we've experienced in the past, where it's like you're a member of a club, you've been there 10 years and you see the same course. Whereas a lot of the people that we deal with, it's their first time, right? So you get that experience of even if I play terrible or great, it's still an awesome experience. So I think we're blessed in that department as well. And I think obviously, John, you're going to be blessed in that department just only because there's always someone new playing Muirfield at St. Andrews, all these renowned, world-renowned golf courses, right?
On the first tee at St. Andrews, people are trembling. They've thought about it. They've dreamt about it for years.
Oh, yeah. And well, there's also a lot of people watching St. Andrews first tee. Always. Jeez.
I mean, that's 129 yards wide, that double first fairway. But you still see people missing it left and right. You know?
What's the worst shots you've seen out there? The worst shot you've seen out there as a caddy in your time, John?
Just, you can't shank a wood, but, you know, imagine the sort of toe, the toe of a three, but it wasn't off the toe, it was off
shank.
The top of the club, near the toe, and it shot at right angles, you know, yeah.
Oh. Actually, it's quite, so you were at St. Andrews Summer, how often did you see a guy on the first tee like hit one OB left or right?
Quite often. Yeah, because if you pull hook and the wind's right to left, there's so much run there. It will. I mean, Ian Baker Finch did it, didn't he? He did it in 95, and that really hurt his career for a long time.
I bet. Jesus.
Yeah, and the creep on the right cuts in. I mean, you know, there's a little bush that you tell him to aim at, and that's about sort of 305 to the start of the creep there, so not many of them hit that far. But the creep on the right cuts in at its beginning at about 205, so, you know, a lot of them knock it in there on the right.
Yeah.
Any well-renowned celebrities or well-known golfers you carry for in your time?
Gary Player in a Senior British Open was pretty good.
Sick.
Carried for him a lot of times at Archerfield because he's a good friend of Kevin Doyle, the owner. This summer, the England cricket team. I'm not a massive cricketer. I had Zach Crawley.
You sent me a few pictures of that.
Yeah, so it's Ben Stokes, Jamie Anderson, Zach, and Harry Brook on this, what do you call it? It was a week before the Ashes or 10 days before the Ashes, so it was a team building, bonding.
Yeah.
They'd met a bloke called Flintoff the night before.
They were a little mean.
They were a tad delicate.
Love that.
Were they any good?
Zach Crawley's brilliant. He's a Queenwood Sunningdale member, and he showed level par off the tips.
But yeah.
With a six on number 10 from Rory's bunker. So he's knocked it 295 into that bunker. Tried to be too cute, took six, but still knocked it around a level.
Nice.
Wow. That's all. Because Stuart Broad's a brave cricketer as well, isn't he?
Yeah.
That's awesome. Flintoff.
And the year before, I had Eli Manning.
I remember you saying that.
2 days after the Open at North Berwick, blah, blah, blah. Where are you guys staying? They point to the Marine Hotel. Oh, there. We just bought it, actually. Oh, really? So they bought the Russocks, St. Andrews, the Marine Troon, the Marine North Berwick, and another one in Ireland.
Why do you think the Americans, especially, you know, not just sports stars, but in general, is it down to the history? Why Americans just love the UK and they just love Ireland and Scotland and England and just the history?
It's a massive connection. So the Boston guys, the Chicago guys, they're nearly all Irish, aren't they? You know, there's a sort of Irish. And they know, my grandmother was a Campbell, you know, blah, blah, blah. They know loads more than we do about ancestry.
It's true, actually. I get told by some guests, I'm like, you know, I feel like I'm pretty known within my culture, but they know so much.
Yeah.
To the T of their family's family.
Yeah.
It's incredible.
Yeah, and they love it too. I'm quite ignorant about parts of Ireland, but I must go over there more. But I mean, they know loads of, you know, they just love playing Ballybunion and Old Head and Sligo and whatever, you know. Yeah, crikey, must get down there actually. I mean, that west coast of Ireland,
awesome,
pure.
Beautiful.
I must drive north up 75 and see you, chaps, at some point. I mean, because it's just to drop in and
come for a lube. On the lube, we'll talk to my app. We'll get a loop in order just for a day.
Come up in April. Stay a month. Hey, your boy's you regular.
Yeah, he does. You've been replaced.
No.
Not on your level, though, but.
Who? Oh, he's good. He's brilliant. Yeah, he is good.
Yeah. Stuart hates him.
Of course. What I'll do, I'll come up in Cali for the god of Florida senior golf. Yeah. He was born off plus four. Yeah. I'll Cali for
brilliant.
Born off plus four. That's glad.
Yeah. Oh, it's been, I don't know, 2 years or so since we saw you.
Yeah. Anyway, great that you got this thing up and running. Anyway, you're doing great. And
I have to talk about a few funny stories with John. So first time, obviously, I'm ever on the loop. You know, we don't have too many English guys out there, but you know, John's not your average Englishman. You know, bit exuberant. So I was like, oh, this guy's great. And I'd say, John, you're a bit of a worrier sometimes, right?
Sometimes.
Just because you want to do your job well, which I respect. So we're out in that line and all those guys, that group, and me struggles to see, right? So we were on 10. They've cleared all that crap out from the left, and he pulls one. I saw a signal up. I don't think you did. You turn to me and you go, Croak, you see that? I was like, I knew where it went, but I just wanted to see your reaction. And I was like, I'm not sure, mate. He's like, oh, bloody hell. Shit. Mies is going to be pissed. I don't know where that went. You're asking two caddies behind you. They have absolutely no clue. You're just stressing, looking down right.
Lose one of them balls ever. I mean, down number five, he always bangs it right into the, you know, 5 foot tall, bloody thick grass. And if you don't find it, you're in for a grilling, you know. I should start dropping them down my pocket. I mean, they're all.
Yeah. And it was so good.
TP5s with on them. And you can't even spell.
And I remember telling you, and you go, bloody wanker. Why would you do that to me? You're stressing me out. And I was like, I'm sorry, Johnny. I had to do it. I had to get you. It was good, man.
I remember, I never saw this. You told me about this. You did like a caddy challenge on 8. And you mangled your thumb or something, didn't you?
Yeah.
You're like, I shouldn't be swinging. I've got a thumb injury.
Yeah.
You got to route through it. Yeah.
So I won one. I knocked one to 5 feet once. I shouldn't have.
I should not.
Did you not hole out or something?
No, I knocked it pretty stiff though. Yeah.
Wow. Typical job.
I did that at Renaissance had these Cypress Point caddies, and they were brilliant. Because they get it, because they, you know, they caddies understand that, you know, good caddies should get tipped, sort of thing. And I'd looped, and the caddy master said, do you want to go out with these guys? Oh, Ross. And the caddies were like, we're going to make it worth your while. We caddy at Cyprus. And it was brilliant from start to finish. But then these were the days when you probably weren't allowed to hit a shot on the course. And it was the 13th, which is it's a different configuration now. It was a par 3, 168 or something. Come on then, John, show us what you got. I'm not allowed to hit the ball. Show us what you got. And I get this 6-iron out, and I hit it one groove too low. It stops quarter of an inch from going in. Oh, I mean, so if it had gone in, I couldn't have said.
Yeah, what do you do?
Yeah, what do you do, right? You got bullied. You got bullied in hitting one.
That's quality.
Yeah. Brilliant.
Right.
Well, yeah, this has been an absolute treat.
Epic, yeah.
I feel like we could talk for a long time, John. You've traveled the world, you've gone in and out of the country, you've caddied for the best Gary player.
Everyone knows about you as well, even up in Michigan. Like,
is that right?
You know Johnny Rowe, you know. Quality.
See, yes, old Rothwell and Johnny Hutton, yeah, there's some good lads up there. Well, that's the thing, the you know, where whoever we're caddying for, where you're from, Chicago, all right, so do you know so-and-so at Butler, it'll be... There's we're only one person away from someone that they know, you know. So
that's the caddying world. That's the caddying world, especially if you're English or British.
Yeah, you, in besides, you're good, like, yeah. oh, I play at Hong Kong. Oh, do they Peter Downey? How do they Peter Downey? Oh, he used to be in Dubai, Dubai Trigger. Yeah, there's always bloody someone that you know. That, you know, it's just.
Are you always going to be traveling though, till the end, or do you want to reside somewhere specific?
I always thought. I mean, I love the Canary Islands because the weather's absolutely bloody perfect. I like the vibe, I like everything about it. But I've been there a few times recently, and it's like lost a bit of its appeal. So in terms of, is there a definitive place that I'd absolutely love to settle down in? I haven't found that place yet.
Wherever
that is. I quite like the east coast of Florida. I quite like that sort of, you know, that Jupiter looks, you know, obviously, why does Rory, Tiger, Michael Jordan, all that, I want to be out of there because,
yeah,
it's pretty darn good. Golf courses so everywhere.
You're in Naples right now? Beautiful place. That must be blowing up.
You guys are always welcome. I mean, wherever you're in the area, if you are, I'm standing, I've got a condo on the bloody 9th tee of the West Course here. I'm not a member, but I mean,
oh yeah,
living on a golf course.
Oh yeah, I played that place. I remember I went down a few years ago.
Yeah, it's all right.
Well, where we were up in Michigan this summer, you there's a few OC boys at where we were at.
Steve,
like Paul and Steve.
Actually,
and,
yeah.
It's
a great little group. Yeah, we'll have to take a trip down and play.
And Gil Hans is doing a course a mile away from me.
Oh wow.
Kinsale,
yeah, a new track, yeah.
Sold out in a week. Initial phase of memberships.
So, oh, it's gonna be
I should take a photo. It's basically it's been cleared away, it's just loads of sand, concrete irrigation pipes and a few trees at the moment, but it's gonna be good.
When's that supposed to open? And will you go over there or are you gonna stay at OC?
I'll stay at OC.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. It doesn't look like it's going to be finished.
I heard it's like end of next year, but even they're never accurate. You're probably looking 2 years.
You can't join a club in Naples now. It's like even as rich as everyone is around here, there's waiting list, 4 or 5 year waiting list.
Wait, let's start.
Naples is all private as well. There's not much public golf down there.
Yeah.
No.
But nice area.
Anything else you want to mention, John? Anything?
Can't think. But like I said, I must come up and see you. And I will. And,
yeah, 100%. Let us know.
Yes. Right.
Let us know. We'll thank you for your time, sir. We appreciate very much. You know, as I say, we could talk for hours about all the guys you've carried for and the courses you've carried at, but we'll have to deal with this hour, 45-minute conversation.
I didn't carry for the reigning US Open champion the other day like someone did. Yeah.
I will be discussing that in next week's episode. So next week's episode. Everyone tune in.
Yeah. All right, boys.
Oh, yeah.
Cheers. Pleasure.
All right, Johnny.
All right, John.
Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Good to see you.
All right, mate. In a bit. Yeah.
What a guy. What a geezer.
Oh, I love him.
I love him. I miss him. I haven't seen him for about 2 years.
So
I had a chat with him.
I mean, myself included, but I just wanted to tell the listeners, if you need to Google all the names he dropped.
Yeah, a lot of niche names.
A lot of niche names. Johnny knows a lot of people in the world. He's got a good memory.
But, just an interesting geezer. He's done it all. Caddied, corporate world.
Travel
lived on
world.
Different continents. And he's always come back to Lupin and the game of golf. Just a top boy.
He loves it.
But, I mean, yeah, I want to know what the listeners think. What do they think about Johnny Rowell? So much stuff we could delve into. I mean, guy caddy for Gary Player.
That's unbelievable.
Like just that in itself, we could get a whole
the character
pod on.
The characters. I mean, his accent was actually really good as well. I'm hoping people linked up on that because that was actually a really good, not just a South African accent, but a Gary Player accent too.
Brilliant.
It's actually pretty sick. He loves it. But yeah, he's as I say, he's going to be do it till the end. Do it to the end of time.
I mean, why not? Your body can do it. You can walk around, get your steps in.
God bless him.
Make some pocket money.
Yeah, for him, pocket money.
Meet some cool guys.
And also, we didn't touch on this too, but Johnny actually had a detached retina.
Oh, yeah, shoot, we should.
At some point in time. We may get...
Oh, Christ, yeah, we should have talked about that.
We might, he's might as well linked into to talking about that. We'll maybe get him on a phone call, but... I think that I didn't really want to delve too much into that obviously, because it didn't really have much to do with golf. But also, it was funny because at the end of the pod, as you just heard about the Mies, as John likes to call him, he was blind in one eye. So the double team
still is.
But all in all, they had a pair of working eyes.
Together, they had two eyeballs.
I thought, when I told that story of stressing out John, told me about him. Obviously, you'd known him for a little longer than me. But I remember I was just like, I'm gonna get him here. I'm going to get him, see if he stresses out. And he did. He did. But he just loves it. He loves the environment he works in. If I had John as a caddy, he'd be my regular every day.
100%. Just a top boy. But yeah, let us know what you think. We'll be back to normal programming next episode where, if we haven't already said it or you haven't seen it, Wyndham Clark came to our course. I was on the bag, so we're going to go over that in detail. He was talking about the Ryder Cup, US Open. You know, top 20 player, top 10 player in the world.
Top 10 player in the world. A lot of cash made. Good player, young guy, good swing, good looking.
I mean,
great fit clothing.
What hasn't he got? Where's the floor?
He hasn't got a British Open, but or a Ryder Cup winning medal. But.
But anyway.
Tune in next week. But this is guest episode with the one and only Johnny Rowell. I hope you enjoyed it. We'll finish off. Live.
Laugh.
Live.